The truth is, there's never a great time to reinvent.
Nope.
It's like having a child. It's never the right time to have it. You just have to do it, and you have to get started.
Hello, you are listening to the Late Bloomer Living Podcast. I'm Yvonne Marchese, your host, and I'm so happy you're here. I created this podcast to give you inspiration and let you know you're not alone in feeling stuck in midlife. I also invite you to join the Age Agitators Club for Women, where we come together monthly to hatch our plans for making waves as we age. Being part of this community for women will remind you on a regular basis that you're not too old, and it's never too late to do that thing you've been thinking about. You can find more information at latebloomerliving.com/community, and I hope to see you there. Hello, my friend. Are you feeling stuck? You need a change? And are you feeling like all the things you've done up to now just aren't working for you anymore? If so, you have tuned into the right conversation for today. And I want you to know I've been there and I'll probably be there again at some point. We are evolving humans. That doesn't just stop changing just because we're getting older. I have a guest with me today who I would venture to say is an expert on reinvention. Leslie Jane Seymour is the founder of Covey Club, which she launched in 2017. And by the way, on the website, it says Covey Club is a meeting place for lifelong learners, and a covey is a small flock of birds. I love that. So going back to before her Covey Club days, from 2008 to 2016, she served as the editor-in-chief of More Magazine. And in July of 2015, she created history by having the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, guest edit an entire issue. So cool. She is the author of two books, On the Edge, 100 Years of Vogue, and I Wish My Parents Understood, don't we all? And she is a certified Tiny Habits coach, which I can't wait to talk to her about also. Leslie, thank you so much for being with me today. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here. And yes, we know a lot about reinvention. not necessarily by, you know, it wasn't my choice, but that's kind of where I ended up.
Right. Yeah. So you're doing what you're doing because you ended your tenure at More Magazine, right?
Right. When they closed the magazine. Yes. And, you know, nobody thinks that their business is going to go out of business. And all the things I used to do are practically dead. And it's just, you know, it's a changing landscape and you have to change with it. It's horribly sad if you loved magazines. I still love magazines. I mean, and luckily I live in New Orleans where they kind of are a throwback to like the 90s. There's a bunch of local magazines and I like read them all cover to cover because there's nothing
something
else
about
to read.
Those glossy pages and
right.
Flipping through them. I always go backwards to frontwards. I don't
right.
know why.
A lot of people did. And in fact, the back page was always one of the most important pages of the magazine. Always was. A lot of people read backwards. Very,
yeah.
Very interesting, right?
Yeah.
But who knew? And my readers were really angry when they closed the magazine and came to me and asked me to do something else for them. And that's how Covey Club was born.
Now, More Magazine, if I remember right, it was kind of aimed at the 40-ish woman.
Yeah, 40, right? 50, 60. Yeah.
Loved it, even though I was in my 30s at the time when it was in publication.
A lot of people read up.
Yeah.
A lot.
When it came out, it struck a chord with me. I was like, this is so, it just hit me in a way that the other magazines weren't, you know?
Well, you get tired of being told your basic, you know, reason for being on this planet is to make some guy happy in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what all the other magazines were about as we grew up.
Bottom.
And Cosmo was the leading proponent of that, and the sex line made it sell, and it was always about him, not her. It was just a fact, and we grew up with that. And you know what? That just got boring. And when you get into your 40s, 50s, and 60s, you either have figured out how to make him happy or you're done with it and you're trying to make yourself happy and you're not interested. You're interested in something else, which is the rest of your life. You know, we are more than our sexuality. And guess what? When I got to More Magazine, you know what happened? Sex lines didn't sell. Sex lines stopped selling because women had actually gotten to the point where they said, you know what? I got this.
I feel like cheering.
What about the rest of my life? Yes.
I feel like cheering. Yeah.
And it doesn't sell. It's not the number one seller on Cubby Club when we do articles at all, you know? And I think that's because women finally have the ability to say there's more to life than just one thing. I'm here for many, many things. I'm here for motherhood. I'm here for community. I'm here for changing the world. I'm here for, you know, making a difference. I mean, you know, all those, like, kind of society sees us one way, but we are multidimensional.
Absolutely. You know? I want to go back in time to the when, you know, more stopped existing. And there you are. Oh, my gosh. I bet it was.
Painful. Yeah. And I have a lot of people who come on to, no, that's all right. I have people who come on social media and they say, you know, I was in the magazine, or it really, you know, this is the thing you said that really changed my life, or I have my whole stack of magazines and it's so, you know, awful that it went out of business. And I'm like, yeah, it's awful.
I agree.
It went out of business. I'm totally with you. But it was really because the advertisers didn't want to talk to women older who are older. They assume that if you're over the age of 40, you don't buy anything. Like, hello, like, what do you mean we don't buy anything? We're at the, you know, at the prime of our purchasing power and our need to purchase.
Do you think advertisers are starting to catch on to this? It's still a problem, right?
It's still a problem. That's why you see there are a few people out there who figured out that there's business to be made in the menopause market. You've probably seen all the menopause products coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They've realized there's a gap. We've been saying this forever, that there's a gap. No one's helped us with the symptoms of menopause, other than the doctors who have HRT. So a lot of people jumped in. But what you're seeing is when you read the reviews on most of these products, it's like, it's okay. It doesn't really help that much. It's fine, but nothing's really taking off. People who have tried to open businesses that are just in that area of selling, you know, menopause products, they can't make a living. So we're not quite there yet. We have the touch and go, you know, we have Harper's Bazaar who did a story about Carol Burnett, who's 90. Woo! Like, you know, we get these like moments of, oh, guess what? There are people above the age of 30 who exist in our world and they're really amazing. Oh, look at that. Or we get, you know, Iris Apfel in a Mac ad, but it's trendy, you know, it's trendy. It's not the heart of what they're doing. It's kind of like, it's just a trend for the moment. It's like throw out something to make a little noise. And then we go back to putting 30-year-olds in the $4,000 dresses they can't afford.
Right. So what did you do when you found yourself floundering or just going, what's next?
Well, the good part was, is that I knew, because the magazine never fit with its parent company. The parent company was a very, what do you want to call it? Business. They did Better Homes and Gardens. They did, you know, woodworking. It was, you know, very, very cooking and cleaning for women. And we weren't about cooking and cleaning. And so we knew it was going to be, you know, eventually magazines were struggling and then we never fit in. We were born to the wrong family. We should have been born in an upscale company like Condé Nast or Hearst.
Yeah. It definitely had an upscale feel and I definitely felt like it was talking to the career woman.
Yes, it was. And that was not who they were interested in the cooking and cleaning area. So, I mean, yes, she had to do that, but that was not her focus.
Right.
And so we always knew it was going to tank at some point. And I kept telling my friends, I was like, this is the year. And it went on for 8 years. And so I was prepared. I was very clear-eyed about it. I knew it was, you know, it was a public company and every year we were on the chopping block. So
you were prepared.
I was prepared
mentally, emotionally.
Totally.
Did you prepare in any other way? Did you?
I worked on my social media. I went back to school and got a degree in sustainability degree up at Columbia. I got a master's.
I totally wanted to talk to you about that. What pulled you to sustainability?
That was my protection. I had originally gone to Duke University in my 20s because I wanted to be a marine biologist. And they focused, they had the marine labs at Beaufort. That was my goal. Uh-huh. I got there. I'd come from a small highbrow women's boarding school that still kind of had the vestiges of, like, you know, a little bit of the ladies' imprimatur, right? So I was really, really well schooled in literature and writing, and I always wanted to be a writer. And I did great in my science and math classes, but there were a few. And so I got to Duke, and I was getting massacred in these big auditoriums with 600 people who'd had 4 and 5 chemistry courses, and I'd had one. And I was like, you know what? I'm killing myself. And I switched over my junior year into English. And my parents nearly had a heart attack. They were like, you're going to die in a garret somewhere. Then you're not going to make any money. You're going to die. And I was like, I'm going to figure it out. I want to be a writer. And so my writing career took off. I had a fabulous career. And then when it came to that crux point of reinvention, what I do tell people is one of the ways to figure out what your reinvention might be is to look back in your past. I mean, for instance, people I've interviewed, you know, they wanted to be a ballerina, didn't we all? I did it too. And I can't be a ballerina. I'm never going to be anything. But now in your reinvention, this woman went back, she had financial background, and she ended up being in finance for one of the ballet companies. So I did a very similar thing, which was I said, you know, what were the things that I used to love and that I have an affinity for? And is there a way to bring that into the life that I have now? And is it a growing business? Well, unfortunately, sustainability is a growing business. And the beauty business, which I, you know, I'd been a beauty editor at Glamour. And of course, as an editor-in-chief, you deal a lot with the beauty business. I knew a lot of people. And I thought, you know, that's a growing business. They're a disaster. They're throwing all kinds of microbeads into everything. They need to, you know, plastic things they throw away all the time. We need to figure this out. So I went up to get my degree. Unfortunately, they pulled the plug on more. I was only 3 years into what took me 6 years. So I was 4 years in. I had 2 more years. So I didn't have my degree. I couldn't quite segue over. And then my readers came to me and said, do Covey Club. And it took off. And I have sustainability in my background, so I can do it at any point. But the Covey Club kind of consumed my whole time. But the wonderful thing about going back to school and getting your master's as an adult, A, it expands your mind. B, you learn all the current tech that there is because you're in there with 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds. And going back to school as an adult, it just exercises a part of your mind that has gone dead. Really, it's a very different part of your mind that you don't use in any other way. And I think if I had not gone back, my mind, my brain would not have been in the right moment for starting Covey. And all the technology. I knew, you'd sit in these classes with these kids and they would go, and we're going to do this on this, pull down that apple. And they'd be like, blah, 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 blah. And I'd be like going like, what? Show me the what? Like the what? How do I pull that down? So, you know, it taught me an awful lot about that as well.
Yeah. Wow. There's just another good, you know, I always talk about the power of those intergenerational relationships.
Totally.
That is a perfect example of that right there, you know.
And one of the things, if you'll permit me for 2 minutes of high horsing, one of the things that stands in the way of a lot of people, 40, 50, 60, is not staying current on tech. And part of the problem is that a lot of us, we were already at a very high level when everything transformed into digital. We didn't have to learn the nitty gritty. We hired assistants. There were other departments that did that. You handed it off, right? Guess what? When you are in transition, you are going to have to know all that stuff. And it doesn't come easily to our brains, but we have to do it.
Yeah. And it's good for your brain too.
It's good
for
your brain.
Making those synaptic connections. I mean, I love that they're discovering so much about brain plasticity now.
Yes.
That we are not, it's not that we can't learn things.
No.
It may take a little longer to, you know, we've got, I think what they say is that the younger mind has more of a facile, quicker movement, but we've got all this background of information and being able to compartmentalize things and put things in perspective, and we can absolutely learn new things. I'm getting on the high horse with you.
Yeah. And the technology, it exercises the way that education exercises another part of your brain. The technology really is a whole part of your brain that's going to feel really uncomfortable for a while. And then when you get more used to it, you definitely get more comfortable with it. In the beginning, it is literally like putting on shoes backwards.
Torture.
And being told to walk down the street with shoes on that are backwards. And it's painful and it's scary. And I mean, I can't tell you how much cursing I do in private at the computer.
I'm with you. I had to learn how to build a website when I started the podcast, and I decided to do it on WordPress. And
Oh my God, WordPress is hard. It's not that easy.
Oh my God, it was so hard. But I wanted it to be my platform. Yes. It was important to me. And I did it during COVID. So it was a lot of Googling. It was a lot of YouTube video. I mean, you can learn anything on YouTube and Google. It's incredible. And eventually I found the right tutorials and I pieced it together. And literally there were days I just felt blind by the end of the day because of taking in so much information and banging my head against.
It makes your head hurt, right? It actually makes your head hurt.
I told my husband, I feel crispy. I just feel crispy.
You can't take in any more digital education. It's just, I can have it in small bits. And it literally, I believe it is because our brain was not raised that way. I think, you know, the people that come up with my daughter's 28, she grew up with a phone in her hand.
Yeah.
I think they have different pathways. So it's very easy to use. Yeah. Where they struggle.
Have you found though that it's easier?
Any kind of mechanical thing.
Yeah. Yeah. True that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find it easier now that you have, like, you've embraced it and you've become familiar with maybe one platform over here, and so the next one doesn't seem quite as scary to step into?
Yes, except there's still a barrier. And it's funny because we're going to move off of it. We're going to put our community onto the site now. We used to have it in an app, a separate app called Mighty Networks. And we found it was too confusing for everybody. Nobody understood that there was coveyclub.com, which is the site which has all the content and has the actual membership stuff and all this stuff. And then there was an app in your hand that was just, it was a private app so that nobody's scraping your stuff.
Right.
But they couldn't put the two together. It was too hard. So we're going to move everything to the site. And it was interesting. Somebody who is very savvy in this area, she said to me when I said we're going to do that this year, she said, oh, good, because it was just too hard to learn one more thing.
Yeah.
And I understand that feeling. It's that feeling when I have somebody who's, you know, like a new marketing person, she goes, you know, and we want to work on, you know, we're going to use, Asana. And I was like, oh no, like we have to start with something new. Like, oh my God, please. Right. It's that feeling of
dread.
It's dread.
I'm just going to say it. Dread.
It's dread. It's dread.
Yeah.
I don't think the young people have that sense of dread. It's like you have this sense you're going to have to put aside a week to learn this thing. And you may.
Yeah.
Or it may be a couple of hours. But you have this sense that it's dread. You absolutely hit it.
It gets easier. It really does.
It does. But that's one of the issues when you're trying to reinvent and you're a little bit older. You really need to have that education. You can get it, you know, like an advanced education, continuing education. You can get it at the high schools. You can get it through videos. But I find a lot of resistance to being facile.
Yeah.
And you have to. You have to now. You have to.
Yeah, you got
to
force yourself, really. It's true of everything, though. All the good stuff is on the other side of discomfort. And
yes, true.
I want to talk to you because reinvention is clearly so important to you. I mean, the name of your podcast is Reinvent Yourself. Why is it so important to you?
Well, I just feel like if you're not reinventing yourself, you're not going to keep up. And you may open yourself up to actually danger in losing a job or, you know, and it has nothing to do with you. A lot of times I have all these people, I do a lecture, which is called Why You Need to Have a Reinvention Plan in Your Back Pocket. And I have these friends who come up to me and they go, oh, well, you know, I've been at my bank for 22 years and they love me. And, you know, that I don't really need to, you know, think about it. I'm really comfortable and I'm like at the top and I make a lot of money. And I'm like, dude, it's not about you. You know, Silicon Bank, they went in on Friday. Silicon Valley Bank, and Monday they were gone. It had nothing right. to do with them. They yeah. loved everybody. It was something else that comes. It's not you often. You know, sometimes it is you, but not always. It can be other things. And we move in a very fast-paced society, whereas you see things open up and they close. Things move. They're the movement, the turnover rate. The when I look at, you know, my husband's father had one job. And he stayed at the place his whole life. And he did the old Mr. Chips retirement thing, right? He got the gold watch and, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You look at, you know, my life, I've had something like, I think it's like, I think it was like seven different jobs. I have to look and see, but something like that. My kids who are in their 20s and 30s now, they're going to have like 15. And the speed at which we move through openings and closings. And, you know, one of the things that people in my Gen X and boomer generation get mad at is the millennials because they don't have any loyalty, supposedly, right? Because they are themselves. They move through these situations in a very untethered way. And we're kind of pissed off.
I think we have a lot to learn from them, frankly.
Yes. Yes, that's my point.
And Gen Z, yes. I think they are much more tuned in to what's important to them to be happy someplace.
Yes, and to be your own turtle moving through this with your own house so that you are not devastated when you've given. They saw our generation give our lives to these companies. And then in 10 years, they go like, you got a new manager. See ya. Bye.
Yeah,
you
it's know? Just business.
Yeah, it's just business, not just personal. Right. How many times was I told that, right? Mm. So I think we have to be prepared for that. I think the next generations have to be prepared for that. It still hurts. I hear it. It's interesting. I hear it in the young people when I talk to them about, you know, they find a job they really like and they want to stick around. But, you know, they're kind of getting the signs that the company may not last. It's a startup. It may not last. And you can feel it's the same kind of, the sadness doesn't go away. The sadness of wanting to stay in a place that you found that you really like. It's not like they don't have that. It's just the reality is that may not happen. You know, like these things open and close. It may be a company that only lasts 10 years. People are not building, they're not building companies in the old fashioned way where they, you know, in the like 20s, 30s, they were building companies forever, right?
Right.
And they were meant to last forever.
A lot of times they're building them so they can sell them, right?
That's right. And they don't care after 5 years what happens to it.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it's a different mindset. So you always have to be thinking about reinvention. You have to be forever learning, which I think keeps you young. I find learning is, you know, I just love it. I'm always on a learning quest. You know, I'm curious person. I'm curious about everything. So I always want to find out how things work and how they tick and why they just how my brain works. And it's not for everybody. Not everybody feels that interest. But what's interesting is at the Covey Club, what I say is we are a club of lifelong learners. And the reason is there are people in this world who approach what they don't know. It's kind of like learning is the can opener that they use for the world. They use that on whatever they don't know. It's just a tactic. And it's exciting. If you are a lifelong learner, it's exciting.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break here so I can tell you about an awesome resource that I think you're going to love. Do you find yourself wondering, what do I want to be when I grow up? If so, then I think you're going to want to subscribe to We're All Getting Older, which is a weekly newsletter written by Lou Blazer. It's all about continuing to grow and get better in the second half of our lives. We're All Getting Older is a sponsor for this podcast. And I'll tell you, I don't choose sponsors lightly. I get so much benefit from reading Lou's newsletter every week. And I think you will too. She writes the newsletter for midlifers who believe in getting better as we get older and making the most of life's second half. Her newsletter was previously called Midlife Cues, but it does have a shiny new name, and I love it. We're all getting older. So if you want to subscribe to that, it is on Substack, and you can easily find a link to subscribe at loublaser.com. That's loublaser.com. And now, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Well, before we go, I want to ask you one last question around reinvention, which is, What do you think is the most powerful first step someone could take towards reinventing themselves?
Well, there's many, many steps to get going, but I'll tell you, I've interviewed over 300 people, men and women, about reinvention. And the key to the whole thing is having what's called an open mindset rather than a closed mindset. It's the work of various psychologists who have found that there are things that indicate if you have a closed mindset, which is, this is the way it always is. I can't do any better. That there is no hope for me. There is no hope for change. You can actually cultivate what's called an open mindset, where you are looking for, you're open to change. You're open to, there's a whole process to that. So that's the number one thing, is you're not going to get anywhere if you have that negative mindset. You just give it up.
That's the self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You are going to keep proving yourself right over and over if you stay that way.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole list of things that you can do. We actually published a little list called 31 Badass Tips and Tricks for Reinventing Yourself Without Fear. We have on the site, we have guides, we have essays, we have everything. But I'll just a quick run through, you know, first of all, you have to say no to the naysayers. There's going to be 100 naysayers all around you saying, why do you need to do this? You're crazy. You already did really well in this other area. Why are you taking a risk? I had many people
and
say
they
to
mean
me,
well.
They mean well. They said, yeah. I had lots of people say to me, you have a really great reputation. Why would you take a risk that this could fail? And I was like, well, because I already own that reputation. If it fails, it fails. Like, whatever. And they're trying to protect you. They're really trying to protect you. It's not that they're being mean or anything like that. You have to have some money put away so that you're not freaking out about money. I say you should plan for a reinvention at least a year or two ahead, which is what I did. I knew things were going poorly at Moore. I said, I'm going to take my severance pay and I'm going to put it towards whatever I'm doing next. And so I socked that away, and that's what I used to launch the Covey Club. You should never be sharing with your company computer devices, phone devices. If you're thinking about reinventing, get yourself off. Make sure you're carrying two phones. One is yours. Keep it all separate. If you have a contract, you need to know, are you in any kind of non-compete situation or not? And then what you have to do is you really have to get started on the reinvention. And I find that a lot of people, they put it off. They're like, oh, well, I'll do it when my kids leave for college. I'll do it when I feel better. I'll do it after my, you know, 55th birthday. I'll do it when we're going to pack up the house first, and then we'll do it. The truth is, there's never a great time to reinvent.
Nope.
It's like having a child. It's never the right time to have it. You just have to do it, and you have to get started. And the hardest thing, the reason why I became a Tiny Habits coach, I don't want to be a life coach. There are plenty of those. The only reason why I did Tiny Habits is because the way to get started, what I see the big barrier is, the mountain looks too big and people are afraid to even put their first stake in the mountain because they feel like if they don't get over the mountain in a week, they're going to be a failure. And the actual truth is, walking up to the mountain is starting. And then taking a step onto the mountain is starting. And there are all kinds of ways to create habits, no matter what kind of reinvention you want to do. And it could be getting yourself healthy. It could be finding a new career. It could be getting out in the dating world after, you know, a divorce or a widowhood or whatever, or figuring out what you want to do once your kids have left and you're dealing with empty nest, right? The problem is you have no momentum. And momentum is the key to getting a reinvention going. And I remember very distinctly sitting at my dining room table when I was finishing up my degree at Columbia in sustainability, and they'd pulled the plug too early at Moore. So I had that, and I had these people saying to me, I want you to do something for me. And at that point, I didn't know like which one was going to happen first. Like, was I going to come up with an idea or was I going to end up in sustainability? So very distinctly, I had a creative project in Cambodia that would be sustainable for bringing people electricity, or I had to learn MailChimp. And I literally would sit there and go, Cambodia or MailChimp? This is my life. And it went on like that for 2 years until I finished the degree. And then all that crazy stuff went out of my life and I could focus on Coffee Club. But that's how it starts. Like, it was like, okay, I'm just going to start this thing and I don't know what it is. And I don't even know, how do you send emails to people? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you do that?
You had assistants to do that for you,
I
right?
I did
that
in the
was
past.
Never
you
part
would
of
say,
your brain process.
Figure this out. Right. Yeah, like, you know, there are you, but what I think is hilarious, because I'm a solopreneur. We've been at this for 7 years. We just had our seventh birthday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have these people, you know, these people that pursue you on LinkedIn all the time. And they're like, Leslie, do you have IT problems? Blah, blah, or I've got, you know, HR. I can solve your HR problems. I go, ding, I don't even have HR. Like, do you know? You don't even know who I am. Like, the IT person, that's me. Like, buddy, like, that's me. Ding. I don't even have time to tell you. Like, just go away. Just go away. Go away. So it is, you know, it's a roller coaster ride. And I love it. It's scary. There are times you run into a wall. You must have found this as well, where you're like, you feel like, you know, you feel like you're caught in the corner of the fence in the chicken yard and you can't get out. And you're like, okay, maybe this is it. I'm done. Like, I don't know how to get out. I'm caught in the corner. This is not happening. That's not happening. What do I do? And then you go to bed and you wake up with like, oh, okay, I got an idea how to get out of the corner. I'm going
to
try that.
Going to bed is such a good way to get a reset, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you go for a walk or
Absolutely.
Talk to friends. But, you know, it's like, it's a roller coaster ride. It's definitely, and, you know, there are many times when I thought with Covey, like, we're done. Like, I can't figure my way out of this. And then I get inspiration somewhere and I try that. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I've interviewed so many people who have reinvented themselves and they've gone through the exact same thing where they say, you know, you think you're dead, you think you're done. Sometimes you are, but, you know, then they figure their way out. That's what it is, right?
Yeah. And I have found this, like, I love that tiny habits thing. One little habit change for me
absolutely
was the launch of everything. It's the reason I have a podcast. And that was that I stopped hitting the snooze button in the morning and I decided to get up an hour earlier. And starting a morning routine with meditation and moving my body every morning, that changed everything.
It's amazing how changing your morning routine can change everything.
Yeah.
And I meditate in the morning too, before I get out of bed. I do my 20-minute meditation and that gets me started for the day. And if I don't do that, I'm a miserable, creepy, nasty person all day. And don't run into me. Don't talk to me. And, but yes, that's what's fascinating about tiny habits. It's change one thing that moves you. And once you see that you can change, then other things change. We do these challenges, 30-day challenges where people come in and we do, you know, we'll do a scale back your life, you know, and clean up your life and simplify your life. That's what we were doing. We did a simplify your life one. We did a reinvention challenge. It was every day we had a prompt and every week we met and talked about where you were and talked about what your barriers were and why you were getting it done or not getting it done. One woman wrote a book of poetry. People did all kinds of different things. You think, I can't do this because I can't get started. It's too big. You can, the momentum is what keeps you going. And what's, you know, I call it the spoon theory. What I always say is, you know, if we were all stuck in prison together, but we had spoons, we could dig ourselves out. Together, we could dig ourselves out, right? It would be slow, but we could do it. And you have to do that little spoon at a time. And before you know it, you've got the big hole and you can slip under the fence.
There you go. There you go. Oh my goodness. I love it. I could talk to you all day, Leslie. I
know
that
it's
you have
cuckoo, right?
someplace to be next.
Yes.
Where can people find you, or what are you most excited about that's coming up next?
Well, we've got a whole revamp of the site that's really exciting. We're going to open up a marketplace because we do so much business internally with each other. So that's new. We're going to put all of our communications on the site too. That's coming in a month or two. So come check out coveyclub.com. We're on social media as well. It's COVEY, like the birds. It's a little group of birds. And what's great is you can join for a month for free. Check us out. You don't like us, you go away. And a lot of people test us out and see if it's right for them. And people tell us we've changed their lives. We started their businesses. They have met people who they've gone into business with. Lifelong friendships have happened. It's a really wonderful experience. And the really important thing is, if you're really serious about your reinvention, don't do it alone. I had to do it alone. It was horrible. You know, trying to figure out what mail service to use. It took me 3 weeks of figuring, looking them all, comparing them all. You know, now what happens, somebody who's a new entrepreneur comes onto the site and they go, which mail service should I use? 10 of us go, this, this, or this, skip the rest. We already know. Done. Now on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you have community. And
yeah.
then you get the support. You get the support of community. So we're everywhere. Look for coveyclub.com and you'll find us.
Thank you so much for being with me today, Leslie. I really appreciate it. It was great. Well, there you have it. Leslie really had some great insights on the how-tos of reinvention. I knew she would. Remember, the key lies in cultivating an open mindset and taking those small, manageable steps towards change. I loved that she likened the journey of transformation to digging through a prison wall with spoons. A little painful, right? Slow, but undeniably effective. Just little baby steps, little spoonfuls, peoples. If you found inspiration in today's conversation, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button in your podcast app so that you won't miss an episode. And please leave us a review. Your feedback fuels my mission to bring you more empowering discussions. Join me and all the other listeners in embracing the beauty of change and the endless possibilities that come with it. Until next time, bloom like you mean it, my friend. Oh, by the way, if you want more information about Leslie Jane Seymour or the Covey Club, you can find a link to her website in the show notes. Just go to latebloomerliving.com/podcast and look for episode 176. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you have a fantastic week. Stay safe and well. Talk soon.